I want to welcome everyone to the Second Court of Appeals this afternoon. Thank you for being here. We've got two cases that will be argued at 1:30 and another case that will be argued at 3. Before we begin, I'd like to introduce the panel for the first case at 1:30. The second case at 1:30 is a different panel, and we'll take a brief recess after the first case is argued to reconstitute the panel. But to my right is Justice Lee Gabriel, and to my left is Justice Mark Pittman, and I'm Chief Justice Bonnie Sutterth. It's my understanding that the attorneys have checked in. Would the clerk please call the case?
The court will now call David D. Scott and Mary J. Scott versus Robert G. West et al. May it please the court, Mr. Randall Smith will argue for the appellant. Mr. Gregory R. Alvey will argue for the appellee.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Randall Schmidt. I'm with the law firm of Cotton Schmidt here in Fort Worth, and I'm appearing here today on behalf of the appellants, David Scott and Mary Scott. Who are the plaintiffs in a case still pending in the County Court of Law 2 before Judge Jennifer Reimel. This is a permissive interlocutory appeal granted by this court only to determine the issue identified as a controlling question of law, whether plaintiffs or defendants have the legal duty to repair or replace the subject retaining wall.
Is it possible that neither side has a duty?
I don't believe so.
You think somebody has to have a duty in this case?
I think there is a definite duty to repair or replace the wall which resides with the defendants. I believe I'll make that clear.
Go ahead.
Proceed.
Mm-hmm.
Appeal is on the limited legal issue of whether the plaintiffs, who are the Scotts, or the defendants, the Millers, West, Bales, and Clarks, have the legal duty to repair or replace the subject retaining wall which divides their properties. The appeal was certified because Texas law did not specifically answer that question. The Texas case that is on point, most closely on point, is Carry On versus Singley, a Waco Court of Appeals case from 1981, which did establish very clearly that the Scotts, as the owners of the lower property, have no legal duty to maintain the retaining wall that supports the higher property of the various defendants, even, Your Honors, if the retaining wall was entirely on the Scott property.
But the carry-on case didn't go on to say that the higher elevation property owners had a duty, did it?
Exactly why we are here today, Your Honor. We do have Texas precedent from over 37 years ago that answers the question before this court to the extent that it says the plaintiffs, the Scotts, do not have that legal duty. Therefore, I agree. The question before this Court of Appeals is whether the defendants have that legal duty. I intend to show the court that they clearly do. The common law says they do, Your Honors. The case law in other jurisdictions say that they do, and the logical extension of the Texas precedent that we have say that they do. The retaining wall in this case divides the properties of the parties, but the sole purpose of that wall is to keep the soils of each of the defendants' properties within the boundary lines of their property and off of the Scott's property.
You can see that the retaining wall is on your client's property?
I do not concede that it's entirely on my client's property. It's clearly the case that the retaining wall was built on the property line, and although the defendants argue from time to time that the front of the wall for the survey that we gave the court is on our property line, the back of the wall is generally on the defendant's property line unless it has been pushed by forces behind it further on to the Scott property.
How important is that for our analysis when deciding who has the duty?
I don't believe it's important at all, Your Honor, because the Carry On Singley case clearly says even if the wall is on the property of the Scotts, even if it's entirely on our property, they have no duty to repair it or retain it. Now, what we need to be clear about is that the duty of the defendants is to keep their soils within their boundary lines and, if necessary to do so, to build a structure such as a retaining wall to do it. So in a way, the question before the court, whether it's repaired or replaced, is a little bit misleading. I think the experts all agree that the wall is beyond repair. The question is, does it need to be replaced, and who should bear the burden of replacing it in order for the defendants to fulfill their duty to keep the soils of their properties within their own boundary lines? I'm sure your honors have looked at some of those things. You know that the Scott property, both properties have been excavated and developed. The wall was built by the developer, apparently, and as a result, the properties of the four defendants which surround the Scott property on the north and east sides are from 2 to 7 feet above the Scott property. And this is not, to be clear, this is not a slope. This is an abrupt difference where that wall exists. The Scott property is here, 7 feet above it starts the defendant's properties. Retaining wall extends for 420 feet along the north and east sides of their properties. Neither the Scotts nor the defendants owned the properties at the time that they were developed or that the wall was built. But clearly, the wall is necessary to keep the raised soils of the defendants' properties from falling onto and subsiding into the Scott property.
Doesn't it kind of depend on who did the carving up? I mean, if the neighbors on the higher soil are there because there's a natural bluff there, and the lower residence is there because at the end of the bluff there's a leveled off place. That's one thing. But if when they developed that lower residence, they carved into a hill that was sloping rather than an abrupt bluff, then didn't they create the problem? Didn't the lower?
You're entirely correct, Your Honor, that the problem, to the extent it's a problem, was developed when the developer excavated and filled.
Right.
The point being that all of the common law says is that the right of a property owner, the duty of a property owner, is either to provide lateral support or have the right to be laterally supported. Only, however, when the land of the adjoining property owners is in its natural state. This property is not in its natural state, and there are numerous cases for various reasons that say that that can be done by carving out or building up. The point is that once it is no longer in the natural state, the duty which previously resided with the lower property owner not to remove the lateral support for the higher property switches, and it becomes the duty.
What's the policy reason behind that? I have a hard time understanding why that makes good policy. And common law is supposed to be grounded in good policy. So what is the policy reason behind that?
The policy behind it with regard to natural land is pretty clear.
That I understand.
The policy, as I understand it, behind the corollary rule, which is the lower property owner no longer has a duty when his adjoining property owner raises his property, is because it would be unfair to that lower property owner to burden him with keeping the soils of his neighbor within his neighbor's line. Matter of fact, it would be legally strange or almost impossible to put that duty on him.
Even though the lower landowner is the one that created the problem to begin with, his predecessor.
Sorry.
The lower landowner's predecessor in title caused the problem.
The problem was the difference in elevation. I don't want to call it a problem. The difference in elevation, which all of these people brought their properties knowing, was done by a developer to develop these lots so that they were relatively flat and they could build houses on them and put swimming pools in the backyard. This is not really a problem. It just is a land usage issue.
Let me ask you about our Vecchio case from 1992. The holding in that case seems to indicate to me that when you have subsequent purchasers, as we do in this case, that weren't the original developers, weren't the original landowners, that there is no duty unless the adjoining landowner does something that's negligent. Otherwise, there's no cause of action to have damages to improvements on your property.
I would respond by saying the Vecchio case is entirely in apposite to this case. It is a case involving property in its natural state where the prior owner did, in fact, remove the lateral support by excavating, and the upper owner then tried to sue the successor in title. That case is not the case before this court. The case before this court, this difference in elevation was created for the benefit of all of the property owners 50 or 60 years ago, and they have built their residences, maintained those. So it's clearly, as the court identified, in order to be able to go to a jury with issues and instructions, we have to know whose duty it is.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. You'll concede that you haven't made any negligence allegations against the adjoining landowners, won't you?
No, Your Honor. I would say that the failure of the duty to maintain the soils within their boundary lines and to maintain the wall in order to do that is in of itself negligence.
Okay.
The common law regarding lateral support's very clear. We talked about it here somewhat. There's a duty of lateral support in the natural state. But that includes only, and by the way, these are duties which run with and attached to the land. Even the Williams and Thompson case, our own Texas Supreme Court case, said that. These are duties that are inherited along with the land. The Vecchio case is different because it was a negligent action by the prior owner that they said the subsequent owner was not bound to. But an owner who buys property that obviously has been filled and is already supported by a retaining wall is under the legal duty as the owner of that property to maintain that wall and maintain those soils. It would be just entirely unrealistic and, as I say, I think impossible.
So what's your best case to support your position that the higher elevation landowner has a legal duty of lateral support if the ground is in its unnatural state?
If I understand your question correctly, my position and the Scott's position is that the common law, as it's recited in Amger on adjoining landowners, and as relies on numerous cases around the country, the main one being the Simi versus Jensen case from the Supreme Court of Minnesota over 75 years ago, have consistently held that a landowner is under a duty to keep the soil used to raise the level of his land off of adjoining land. The landowner must build a retaining wall or other structure if necessary to keep the soil within the landowner's own line. That is our position, and I think that's not only the best case, but the clear common law that exists. And Your Honor, it is not only the common law that exists generally and adopted in other states. It is the natural result and logical progression of the common law that has been followed in Texas since the Simon and Nance case in 1907. This is not new. This is just, as you've noted, that the Carrion and Singley case said the lower property owner didn't have the duty. The obvious logical answer is the upper property owner
couldn't
does.
Couldn't it just be as obvious that neither have a legal duty and this becomes a negligence cause of action?
No. The case law and the common law do not support that. If this were an action for damages, and there can be a trespass component, nuisance component, and those would rely on negligence. But the duty with regard to maintaining the soils, you may have seen in my reply brief, I said this case is basically about the dirt, and it is. The obligation and duty which the common law makes clear, Texas cases have followed, Carrion versus Singley got right up to the edge of, is that when that property has been raised artificially by man, the duty to keep that soil within that boundary line is the duty of the property owner of that raised property. And I think any decision to the contrary by this court would be contrary to the common law, contrary to the case precedent that's before us in Texas, and would keep the parties in the impossible situation in which they find themselves, which has led the Scotts to come to court to resolve this issue without waiting until that wall falls. Think about this. When that wall ultimately falls, which it will, the Carrion versus Singley case says Scotts don't have any duty to do anything about it. It's going to damage the property of the defendants as well as the plaintiffs because their property will subside. And when it starts falling onto the property, then they have two choices. They can come back to court and try to say the Scotts should rebuild the wall. That is the Carrion versus Singley case, and it's clear they don't have that obligation. Or they can replace the wall and build them, one of them themselves. We're only at the courthouse because we're trying to resolve this issue before that wall falls completely, causing further damage and potentially injury. Thank you, Your Honors, for your time.
Thank you.
It pleases the court, counsel. My name is Greg Abe. I'm appearing to present oral argument on behalf of all the appellees here today. I represent the Bayless appellees and the West appellees. Miss Dallas is here, represents the Miller appellees, and the Klingman and Clark appellees are represented by Mr. Wall, who is not here today. And I will attempt to address the common issues with respect to duty that are raised in the order that's before this court on appeal on behalf of all the appellees, based upon the commonality of the issues that relate to all of them, even though they certainly are different procedural mechanisms which brought us to the summary judgment in the appellee's favor, as well as in the factual background of their property ownership. I'd like to start with a couple of questions raised by the panel before I jump into where the points I wanted to make, and that is Justice Gambrell's question, which was, does there have to be a duty? And the answer to that is fundamentally and absolutely not. There is absolutely no area in the law in which any court in this state or the Supreme Court of the United States has ever said there must always be a duty. No matter what, we must figure out who has the duty. That is precisely the agenda that's being pushed in the trial court and before this court by the Scotts, is somebody has to have a duty as it relates to the wall which is located on the Scotts property. And the answer to that question is respectfully no. There does not have to be a legal duty. We know the Scotts don't, we know the appellees do not. That's our contention here. That's the issue that's before this court. Whether the Scotts do or not is not the issue. But counsel may be exactly right. His clients may not have a duty to repair that wall. But that's not what we're here about. We're here about whether or not the appellees have a duty to repair that wall. The second point that was raised during oral argument earlier was whether or not how the Vecchio case implicates or comes out in this case. And I respectfully submit, and the appellees respectfully submit, this court will either have to do some amazing dancing or it's going to have to overturn Vecchio, because it is clear that Vecchio holds that where the parties or the defendants are not the parties who excavated or altered the natural state of the land, which brings or gives rise to the plaintiff's claim that the defendant has a duty to alter their land, that there is no duty. So respectfully, the appellees do not believe this court can impose a duty or find there a duty exists on the part of the appellees to repair the wall on the Scotts property and leave, since there is not only...
Well, you say it's on the Scotts property.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
But isn't the wall a lot like an iceberg in the sense that, yes, the part of the wall that you can see may be on their property, but there's a lot more to the wall than can be seen by the eye, and that has to do with the horizontal structure that goes into the defendant's property, actually deeper than the wall encroaches into the Scotts property. And so if you consider the wall as a whole, as a structure, not just what you see, the wall is really quite a ways into the property, the upper properties.
The things the court speaks of are surely interesting, theoretically possible as far as I know, but the one thing I don't know is whether or not any of them are true. What I do know...
You don't think that wall is supported by horizontal?
I know that that wall, where it is above the ground, I know where it appears based upon the summary judgment record, and I know that there is not one scintilla of summary judgment evidence that that wall is on anyone's property other than the Scotts.
Well, should we send it back and let the trial court make some findings or the jury make some findings as to where the retaining wall is located?
I believe that the you raised this question earlier, Justice Pittman, during appellant's oral argument, and that was, does it matter where the wall is? I do think it's germane as to where the wall is for the simple fact of the remedy. In other words, what is this court being asked to do? It's being asked to impose a duty. What does this court have? Because there is no doubt that there is not a case, respectfully, with the arguments that have been made by the appellants in this case, there is no case that imposes a duty under these circumstances on the appellees to come on to the property, which is undisputedly has to happen, regardless of what may be in existence subterraneously or maybe not. We don't know. All we know is what's in the evidence in the summary judgment record, and that is that this wall is unquestionably on the Scotts' property. So when considering whether or not to impose a duty, one of the things this court has to consider, with foreseeability being the most important, is whether what are you asking, what is the circumstances and the burden that's going to be placed upon the defendant. And here, what is that duty? It's going to require the appellees to enter onto the property of the plaintiffs and repair a wall which most decidedly is on their property. I can't tell you that there isn't some part of it that might be on the appellee's property, but we know that it's definitively on the appellant's property. That's the only evidence in this record.
Well, let me stop you, because if the court was to find that neither side has a duty to repair the retaining wall in this place, in this case, and the Scotts take it upon themselves to repair the retaining wall, do they have a cause of action or claim in equity against your clients for repairing the wall, which would give them the benefit of their homes not sliding in to the homes and the property of the Scotts?
I do not believe so, Your Honor.
Would they have a remedy such as unjust enrichment, some kind of equitable remedy to some kind of offset or reimbursement for doing that? Because it would inure to both the benefit of both neighbors for that wall to stay repaired.
Here's where the practical meets the theoretical part of the law, and I agree completely with what the Chief Justice just said. But unfortunately, I don't think that that creates a cause of action. What I believe exists is that there is an obligation, there is a potential obligation should the retaining wall be removed on the part, or a duty and a breach of that duty on the part of the appellees, depending on what theoretical facts happen in the future. Of course, we're just sitting here speculating today, not talking about the record or what has in fact happened. But to the court's question, do I think that there is an equitable remedy would lie if they chose to say, you know what, we don't like the way our wall is leaning, we don't like how it lists, we don't like how it's cracked, whatever the reason is they choose to tear it down and replace, do I think in equity that they have a way of saying, hey, there is either a direct or incidental benefit to those people that my wall is giving them? Do I think the wall necessarily affords them a remedy? I do not. Now, I must be honest, I have not studied that extensively because it's not an issue in this case. It's not before this court. But from a practical standpoint, I simply don't think it exists in the law. Going back to the first question that was asked during oral argument of, does there have to be a duty on behalf of somebody? And the answer is, and it may be unsatisfactory to some, but the reality is the answer is no. There doesn't have to be, and there doesn't have to be a remedy to the Scotts making that election to choose to repair, replace, whatever it may be, the wall on their property.
I would think it'd go to either side. If either party decided to repair that wall, it's going to benefit both sides.
I don't disagree with the court at all, but that issue does not create a legal duty.
I'm not talking about a duty. I'm talking about some kind of right of reimbursement. You know, I think our court is one of the courts in the state that says that unjust enrichment is not a cause of action in and of itself, but it's a remedy. It's an equitable remedy. I'm talking about remedies, not really suing someone or a cause of action, but under some kind of right of reimbursement or something like that.
Right. And I believe before there's a remedy, there must be a duty. I don't see how legally we can get there jurisprudentially to the conclusion that there's a cause of action that allows this remedy, but now we need to fashion a duty. I don't have a tool with which to give the court to say, here's how you can give them a remedy without a duty. I just, from a practical standpoint, don't think that that's possible to do.
As a judge, I hate to give lawyers hypotheticals that don't match the facts as we know them, but I'm like to ask you if you found a case that's similar. What about the situation where you have a fence? I'm not talking about a retaining wall, a fence between two property owners. One property owner replaces the fence. Does he have a right to reimbursement for half the cost of the fence from his neighbor?
It depends on where the fence is.
Well, what if the fence is on the property line? Have you found a case to that effect? How does that has had to have come up in 2,000 years of jurisprudence. Who's responsible in that case?
Yeah, I don't believe there is, because I believe ultimately there is a determination as to where that fence is. And if it ultimately is on the property line, then it is on both their properties.
Well, that's the question I'm asking. So if it's on the property line,
right,
who's responsible for paying for the fence? Do both the landowners or one?
Well,
and what if one landowner takes it upon himself to replace the fence? Does he have a right to reimbursement?
I don't think he does, Your Honor.
Did you find any cases involving
that? I know of none, nor have I. I certainly haven't endeavored to research that question, since I don't think it is really directly germane, not to this scenario, if you will, but to this case and the legal issue, the duty issue that's before this court. Be happy to do so, but I have not run across, as it relates to these issues.
That's fine, and I realize I'm asking you a hypothetical.
And that's perfectly understandable, because I think this scenario, and I think the justice's questions indicate it begs for a fix. We all want to fix it, because as the Chief Justice suggested, I see some benefit for both sides out of this structure. But alas, the law doesn't always meet that need. And in this instance, the appellees submit, because of the lack of duty on their part, it doesn't give the Scotts the right to compel them, and as they have phrased it, and as they seek in their petition, and as they argue in their brief, that duty, that obligation, that remedy lies exclusively on the shoulders of the appellees and not the Scotts.
Do you think our decision is that narrow, that that's all we can decide, is if one side has a duty but not the other, it's framed right now in permissive appeal?
I believe the issue before this court is whether or not the appellees have a duty. And if you read the order, that is the order that was entered by the trial court. That's correct.
Didn't the issue actually, does the plaintiff or the defendant have the legal duty to repair or replace the subject retaining wall?
That is the way the order frames it. But I think that we are bound by the remedy that is sought by the live pleading of the Scotts, which is not, hey, how much of this is our problem or our share? It is these people, the appellees, have a duty to pay to repair and replace this wall that the summary judgment evidence demonstrates is on their property. And there is not one stitch of evidence to the contrary. And again, I go back to the elements of duty and what the factors are the court should look to or is compelled to look to under Texas law as to whether or not to impose the duty. And I submit that none of those circumstances, when studying the facts and circumstances surrounding the occurrence, which is what the Supreme Court and this court and the J.P. Morgan pharmacy case held, and many other cases have held, have to look to. What do we know about the circumstances? We know about property that was excavated, altered, terraced, and a wall built by a developer. None of these parties did that.
Really quickly, sir, what's the best case for your position?
Probably Pacheco. But I would submit, Your Honor, if you parse through all the cases, and I'm perfectly happy with the Minnesota outcome because it says there's no duty. The Minnesota case says there is no duty. And the other cases similarly hold there is no duty unless you're looking at the Simon case out of 1907 out of Austin, held there was a duty, but it was only because the land was in an unaltered state. That's not our circumstance here. We have very clear and unique circumstances. We have property owners, the Scotts, who bought their property in 2010 with full knowledge of the condition of this wall. In fact, according to the inspection report from 2010, they purchased in 2013, but they relied on the inspection report from 2010, told them about the dilapidated conditions and deteriorating conditions of the wall on their property. Their 2012 property damage claim, first party property damage claim, told them the retaining wall on their property wasn't covered when they sought to recover for damage to their wall. And we have a circumstance going to one of the last questions that was asked of the appellants was whether or not, I thank the court for their time and respectfully ask the court to affirm the summary judgment entered by the trial court in all respects.
Thank you.
Your Honors, if I heard Mr. Ave correctly, he said he had no problem with the Minnesota case. And the question that is being asked is, a lot of it has to do with the location of the wall. I really think that's the wrong question. The defense counsel said that there's no scintilla of evidence where it is. That's not correct. The survey in front of the court shows the location of the wall, and the depth and thickness of the wall is such that it obviously must be on a property line. And there is no property line of the Scotts. The property line is a shared property line. It also makes no logical sense, and the expert is of the opinion that the wall was built on the property line. To the extent it no longer is, it's because it is slid, broken, and slid into the other property.
Mr. Smith, I'd like to ask you the same question that I asked Mr. Ave. And again, I'm taking you into the land of hypothetical here. But have you found a case where you have a fence along a shared boundary line? Whose responsibility is it to repair the fence? We're not talking about a retaining wall. I'm just talking about a garden variety fence between two neighbors.
I'm actually glad you asked me that, Your Honor, because as a person who has owned ranch land, I know the answer to that question.
I would assume that has to have come up sometime in Texas.
It comes up, yes, sir. And the answer to that question is you can build a fence on your property line at your own risk and at your own cost. The country rule is that the other side's supposed to share it, but there's absolutely no legal duty that they have to.
Thank you.
I personally built those fences and personally not gotten reimbursed. So,
all I know is the country rule. I guess it's
the fence, that rule is not a legal rule. I do want to say that the Simi Jensen case specifically says the retaining wall or other structure to keep raised land from falling cannot be erected on the adjoining land without invasion of the right of the owner. So we've got to remind, even though the current wall is at least partially and in some places potentially fully on the Scott property, it doesn't mean that that establishes or has anything to do with whose duty it is. If they have to build a replacement wall, it should be on their property. The other is, he said there was no evidence about part of the wall being on the defendant's property. That's not correct. The expert report says there's a footing which has to go back. That wall could not possibly have stood for 50 or 60 years without a substantial footing under it. The defendants themselves in their brief say that the holdings and reasonings in Carrion suggest that when properties are developed in a terraced effect by a developer or earlier property owner, each subsequent owner must bear the cost of his own lateral support and must do so without taking action that negligently damages his neighbor or amounts to nuisance or trespass. We agree. That's correct. The problem with the defendant's positions is they are confusing lateral support, somehow saying that this is an obligation to the plaintiffs. The only duty of lateral support that applies in this case, because we have artificially raised and elevated properties, is the duty of the owners of those properties to provide their own lateral support for their own soils, which were artificially raised. And the question about coming onto the plaintiff's land, it's Scott's land, it's clear. They really don't have a right to do it. Practically speaking, would that be worked out? Of course it would. They really don't have a right to do it. Your Honors, I would submit to you that, again, the common law on this is clear. It's been around for years. The Simi case is 75 years old. The duty is clear. It belongs to the property's owners who have the elevated property. And every property owner that bought a lot, including these defendants, were charged with knowledge of the condition of their property. And they can't say just because we don't see the wall when we look out our backyard that we don't know it's there and we're not charged with the responsibility to know about its condition and be responsible for its repair or replacement. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Your Honor, if I could I make a comment?
Sure.
I'd just like to commend all the attorneys involved in this case for the briefing and the oral advocacy. This has been very interesting, and I think you both did an excellent job.
I second that.
Well, we'll see.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for your argument. It's been very helpful to us today. Your case has been submitted.